See, the bulk of the patients will be vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, you get segregated, you get put in a different part of ED, put into isolation. And people, they just, I mean, I had one consultant on my last night. She stood in front of our big board with everybody, all the patients and all their symptoms, and she said, what's going on? Why have we got so many patients? It's all cardiac, short of breath, you know, collapses, falls. And I just can say, tick, 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 this is adverse reaction. All of our wards are full, you know, of people having cardiac problems, people with flare-ups from their cancer, like you name it. It's just, I guarantee our hospital is full of vaccine damaged. It's just, people are blind. People just cannot see it.
So obviously everyone's been really concerned about hospital beds being taken up. There is a lot of information out there about treatments that are coming from other countries. Why do you think New Zealand has refused to adopt any of those treatments and any of the advice coming out from other countries?
Well, I understand that the reason why we could have our vaccine rolled out as quick as what we could was it was under emergency guidance. And the only reason why it could be rolled out in an emergency is that it's the only form of treatment. So you don't hear our government talking about how to stay healthy. I went to a wellness seminar last night, and it's, you don't hear the government say, like, take B, zinc, D, all of these supplements. You don't hear, you know, the government saying stay healthy, you know, and what to do if you have COVID. If you get COVID, particularly if you're in MIQ, you get Panadol. And what a lot of people don't realise is there's roughly like 5,000 people that have COVID and they're self-isolating. Okay, so, and maybe a small percentage of those end up in hospital. So you don't hear about the large numbers that have got COVID, have recovered from COVID. You only hear about the small minority that end up in hospital. And there's a mixture. So the people that end up in hospital, it's not just the unvaccinated, it's the vaccinated too. You know?
So I've had a lot of people reaching out to me recently saying we tried to do the right thing, we went and got our jab, we thought we were being a good part of society, we were really contributing, and we've had horrible reactions, and the doctors have turned to us and said, we don't know what it is, we can't help you, good luck, effectively. And it seems bizarre that that's our stance on this. What research in the hospitals were they giving out, were they talking about with people that had reactions? Were anyone talking about it, or was it too taboo to talk about?
So, I mean, I've heard of, it depends on the doctor. So when a person comes into ED, it really depends on who they get looking after them. I'd say the majority of doctors are pretty blind themselves and will swear black and blue that whatever they're going through is nothing to do with the vaccine. The odd, depending on how severe, the odd, you know, doctor will say, oh, this could be the vaccine. You know, like you get a disgustingly healthy 30-year-old guy, has not got any lung issues, cardiac issues, and he's in having acute chest pain, you know, the constant feeling of pressure on his chest, shortness of breath, and yet he's healthy. And they're like, oh, well, maybe it could be from, you know, your second jab that you got 3 days ago. And so they'll run tests. In fact, I had one doctor, so I did blood tests on this guy, and I said, oh, I reckon we should get a D-dimer, which is the test to look for, you know, presence of blood clots in the body. And he's like, oh, yeah, I suppose you could do that. So I did a D-dimer. It came back, and it was through the roof. It was like 1,000, and a D-dimer should be zero. And he's like, he just turns to me and said, you know what, I wish I'd never taken that blood test. And I'm like, okay, well, you have now, so you're obligated to do something about it. So, you know, the blood test wouldn't have been done. He would have gone home. He could have died at home.
Not want him taking a blood test?
Because now he's got to follow through and he's got to do all the tests. Whereas, you know, like the a lot of nurses in the background were like, oh, you know, like it's just the same old. People are assuming it's the vaccine. There's nothing wrong with the vaccine. It's, you know, he's anxious or he's got anxiety or he's, you know, it's all in his head. This is what nurses are saying. It's all in people's head. You know, you don't go to ED unless something is seriously wrong.
Coming up, Hawke's Bay GP Dr. Alison Goodwin.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Alison Goodwin, a GP. Well, I was a GP, I'm not sure what to call myself now. So at the start of this conference, I just want to say want to emphasise that we're not giving individual medical advice. These are our personal views, not yet mainstream, and New Zealanders should check the government's website to obtain a range of views. We're not being paid or influenced to be here. So As for me, I'm a Kiwi doctor. I graduated from Otago University in 1993. I worked in an emergency department for a number of years, then started GP training in 2009. I became a fellow of the College of GPs in 2015. I've always been interested in health and have been frustrated by the focus of our health system on managing chronic disease rather than on creating health. To try to address this frustration, I have done additional training in lifestyle medicine, and I understand the power that nutrition, exercise, sleep, and stress management can have, both on preventing and reversing chronic disease and reducing vulnerability to infectious disease. Most doctors are not trained in these areas and are unaware of how powerful lifestyle interventions can be. From the start of the pandemic, I had concerns about the New Zealand response. There was no focus on health creation, and no one was counting the cost of the measures imposed on the population. We were hearing from only a few academics, most of whom were not seeing patients on the ground. I listened to these local experts and found them lacking. So in addition to listening to them, I have spent hundreds of hours, probably over 1,500, listening to and watching overseas experts in a variety of fields, practicing physicians in ICU, ED, cardiology, general practice, scientists, vaccine developers, immunologists, virologists, pathologists, and others in an effort to learn more. I started asking questions in the limited medical forums available, but these were mostly ignored or fobbed off with partial answers. As 2020 progressed, it became obvious that the goal was a vaccine. Treatment wasn't part of the agenda. We had to adhere to strict containment measures until we could all be offered a vaccine. Early on in 2021, I felt increasingly uncomfortable about the inexorable push for a vaccine to the exclusion of all else. I was concerned about the proposed use of a new technology on such a wide scale, about the short length of the clinical trials and small numbers of patients used to provide the interim data that the national program was based on, about the fact that MedSafe had a lot of unanswered questions even as the rollout started, about the lack of any liability for the drug company, and about the continuing lack of discussion about anything else. The marketing campaign began, and the only message was, get vaccinated, it's safe and effective. I was disturbed that no one, apart from Dr. Simon Thornley, in the medical profession, was questioning what we were doing or questioning whether it was safe or appropriate. Trying to engage with the profession got me nowhere, so I felt compelled to speak to the public. I spoke on a Plan B webinar around October 2020, voicing some of the questions I had. It turned out there were a significant number of members of the public sharing my concerns. I have continued to speak as the opportunities have arisen, even though I am much more comfortable having individual medical discussions. Assumptions. This whole situation is based on the assumption that we are in the middle of a pandemic of a deadly disease, that the PCR test is a valid tool for diagnosing an infectious disease, and that there is nothing else that can be done apart from vaccinate us all. All of those assumptions should be debated or challenged. I have a document from the Ministry of Health, and in it there is a sentence that says, most people experience mild illness and recover completely using symptomatic and supportive treatments for viruses, such as rest, fluids, and anti-fever medication. The public has been made to think that if they catch COVID-19, they are going to die. Nothing could be further from the truth. The vast majority of people, including the elderly and infirm, will survive. Some people will die, but they are mostly people who are already in their last year or two of life. Those people might want to be surrounded and supported by their loved ones at the end of their lives, rather than be left scared and alone. The average age of death from COVID-19 is 82 years, which is older than the average life expectancy. The survival rate for our children and young people, less than 29 years of age, is 99.986% without vaccines or treatment. There is the possibility of long COVID, but I do not have a clear idea of how many people that is likely to affect and whether instituting early treatment reduces the chances of that occurring. The process of making a diagnosis seems to have been turned on its head, and now instead of talking to the patient to get a history and examining the patient to assess for signs of disease, we are leaping straight to a diagnostic test and telling people they are sick, regardless of whether they have symptoms or signs of illness. I was always taught to treat the patient, not the test result. Maybe that part of my medical education is redundant. What about treatment? We have heard very little about that. In fact, we have heard there is no treatment. At a recent College of GPs webinar entitled, International Panel, Managing COVID-19 in the Community. GPs heard from experts in Ireland, Norway and Singapore. I posed the question, what treatments are different countries using for COVID-19, both in the outpatient setting and in hospital? Of the 23 questions asked during the webinar, this was the only one that remained unanswered. By the end of the talk, we had heard about vaccination programs and other public health measures, masks, PPE, home or facility isolation, social distancing, hand washing, etc., etc. only. Not one word was mentioned about how they actually treated patients with COVID or what they did to improve the underlying health of the population. GPs are being told there are no treatments, so when you get COVID, you will likely be advised to rest, drink fluids, and take paracetamol or ibuprofen for a fever. For the majority of people, that may be enough, but you might want to be more prepared. In addition to listening to the Ministry of Health, the Medical Council of New Zealand, and the College of GPs, I have listened to Dr. Sahult, America's frontline doctors, Dr. Peter McCulloch, and Dr. Shankara Chetty, all of whom have been treating COVID patients in the community and in hospitals. If you are a doctor wanting to have more tools in your toolbox or a patient who wants to be prepared, I suggest you listen to some of these people. Informed consent. Having been a doctor for over 25 years, I know what an informed consent discussion should involve. It has been abhorrent to me to witness people with no understanding of medical risk-benefit assessment telling the people of New Zealand to get vaccinated. Politicians, sports stars, news readers, business people, workplaces and cultural leaders. Repeating ad nauseam, it's safe and effective, does not equal informed consent. An informed consent discussion should be personalised and private and should include potential benefits of the procedure, but also the risks, uncertainties and alternatives. At the end of such a discussion, a person should be free to choose, free to weigh up the information and make their own decision as to whether or not to accept the procedure. There is no place for force or coercion. Adverse events. As the vaccine program has progressed, the casualties have steadily increased. The number of serious adverse events continues to climb, and the official comment is continue to monitor. We now have, as of last week, 1,125 serious adverse events reported. Strokes, heart attacks, Guillain-Barré syndrome, Bell's palsy, myocarditis, blood clots in the lungs, anaphylaxis, neurological disorders. This number is likely to be an underestimate. These are New Zealanders, many young and previously healthy, whose lives may never be the same again. At what point do we say, stop, this is too much, the risks are now outweighing the benefits? For me, it was a long time ago. I am aware that 94 deaths following vaccination have been reported to MedSafe. At least half of these has been determined not to be related to the vaccine, but it is not clear to me how this determination is made. I'm also aware that the Citizens database has over 220 deaths. If we were doing proper, robust safety monitoring, every person in New Zealand that has been vaccinated, that has died this year, would be on that list, and that death would be thoroughly investigated. That is most definitely not happening. The medical profession. I am disturbed by the medical profession. There has been no place for debate or discussion. As GPs, we have been advised what to do and how to do it. GPs are the doctors most in touch with the public. We have not been asked about what is happening on the ground. We have been sidelined and ignored. We have been told not to use hydroxychloroquine and not to use ivermectin, but we have not been told what we should use to treat COVID-19. We have been told to get vaccinated, and then instead of trusting the vaccine and demonstrating this by taking off our masks and PPE, we are now being told we must dress up in even more protective layers and separate patients and assume every unvaccinated patient is a source of contagion. In some instances, practices are not letting unvaccinated patients into the building and instead are seeing them in tents or in cabins in the car park, if at all. We will be expected to get an endless number of boosters to maintain our vaccination status. When is it all going to end? When will doctors feel safe enough to behave normally? I recently attended another webinar with the title, Can I Refuse to See Unvaccinated Patients? How has the profession sunk so low that it could even consider asking such a question? With regards to the right to decline a medical procedure, I honestly thought my medical colleagues would be standing linked arm in arm at the top of the slippery slope that is forced medical procedures, defending your right. I am horrified that most doctors seem unperturbed by the mandating of medical procedures. Do they really think it's okay to force people to undergo a medical procedure against their wishes? I have had patients tell me they feel as if they are being tortured or raped by this process the government is putting us through. Is that okay? If doctors can stand by and let you be subjected to this procedure, what other procedures will they be happy to let the government force you to have? Will there be requirements to be sterilised before you can do X, Y, or Z? Will doctors be happy with that? Where is their line in the sand? Mine was well and truly crossed a long time ago in this pandemic. The Medical Council of New Zealand. I received an email with letter attached on Thursday the 2nd of September advising me that the Medical Council of New Zealand had become aware of online videos and publications in which I was discussing the COVID-19 pandemic and anti-vaccination messaging. As far as I know, no patients have complained. I was invited to write a response to their somewhat vague concerns. I then received a further letter with more things that they had been made aware of. I have since learned my case was discussed at a supplementary council meeting on the 20th of October. At this meeting, it was determined that I may pose a risk of harm to the public, and they needed to refer me to a professional conduct committee for further investigation. I was asked to sign a voluntary undertaking saying I would not speak in a way that might undermine the national pandemic response or discourage immunisation. A notice under Section 33 of the Health Practitioners Competence Assurance Act 2003 has also been issued, stating, concerns have been raised regarding Dr. Goodwin's practice of medicine and professional conduct to the extent that the Medical Council of New Zealand has reason to believe that Dr. Goodwin's practice may pose a risk of harm to the public. The official information that I have been showing and referencing may actively undermine the national immunisation program. But is it not appropriate to allow people to know that the clinical trials are ongoing, that the messenger RNA and lipid nanoparticles are new technology, that the vaccine still only has provisional consent, that there were 58 conditions applied to the provisional consent, that Pfizer has no liability? Are people not allowed to know how to optimise the functioning of their own immune systems? I did not sign the voluntary undertaking. I am currently waiting to find out from the Medical Council what the next steps are. What about anti-vaxxers? What are they? I think this is worthy of discussion. It's an easy label to apply to someone. It has negative connotations and aims to discredit. It's easy to dismiss an anti-vaxxer as a nutter. But what does it actually mean? I am yet to hear a clear definition of it from anyone, including the Medical Council of New Zealand. I have been labelled an anti-vaxxer. I have not been going around screaming from the rooftops that all vaccines are bad and no one should ever get one. What I have been advocating for from the start is for people to be fully informed and free to choose. Those are fundamental principles of medical practice that my colleagues are happy to toss aside. I personally don't have a problem with people getting this vaccine if they have been honestly and fully informed and have weighed up the risks and benefits and are of the opinion that it will benefit them. On my last day of work this week, I wrote a prescription for a third primary dose of a vaccine for a patient. Would an anti-vaxxer do that? If I advise someone with cardiovascular risk of 5% that, in my opinion, the risks of a statin would likely outweigh the benefits and that there are other ways to keep their heart and cardiovascular system healthy, am I an anti-statiner? There is no one-size-fits-all. There is no medicine where the benefits outweigh the risks for the whole population. So for some people, particularly our children, young people and pregnant women, the risks of this vaccine, both known and unknown, will outweigh the benefits. I would love for someone to define anti-vaxxer for me. Misinformation. At NZDSOS, we have been accused of disseminating misinformation. I would like to point to an example of information sharing using possible vaccine-induced magnetism as an example. Now, I don't have a fully formed opinion about this. No patients have come to me to demonstrate any patients if I can test them for it. However, I have seen videos of people claiming to be magnetic in the region of their vaccination and describing the feeling of something tugging under their skin in the presence of a magnet. I find this interesting and am curious to know more. Could it be a thing? I haven't discounted it and remain open to the possibility that something is going on. Some curious doctors slash scientists in New Zealand have taken this further and have investigated. They have collected information and data and looked at possible ways this could occur. They have looked at the types of technology that have been in development by the companies that make the lipid nanoparticles that are part of the Pfizer vaccine and found that substances with magnetic properties have been developed. They have written an article and supplied references. Maybe there is something to it, maybe not. In my opinion, this potential phenomenon deserves more investigation by inquisitive individuals. In contrast to the doctors and scientists, the media, the NZ Herald 90% Project, has made a short 36-second video on about this topic. The video states that the vaccine cannot and does can stick to the skin when it is sweaty. There are no references or scientific information to support this position. Who has more credibility? My next comment is about vaccine passports. I have heard from politicians, business people, campground owners, media personnel, Air New Zealand and others about how great vaccine passports will be to keep us safe. But I have yet to hear a medical person explaining what information they think a vaccine passport will provide. In my opinion, a vaccine passport, green pass, digital certificate, health pass, whatever it will be called, makes no medical sense and does not demonstrate whether you developed any immunity, whether your immunity has waned, whether you have some immunity but you're still able to be infected and transmit the virus, whether you have superior natural immunity, or whether you have any other infectious disease. It does not demonstrate to me anything about your health. However, it does demonstrate that you have been obedient and complied with orders. If it is not for health reasons, I think we need to consider carefully what it will be used for. If there is a health professional out there who can explain what medical information can be gleaned from a vaccine passport, I would love to know. I did have a quote, I guess aimed at all the people that have lost their job and are wondering what the future holds and what's coming next. And this is from Buckminster Fuller. You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. So personally, I think we need a new health system that focuses on health and a new education system and probably some other new systems in New Zealand as well. Thank you.
I said, well, you know that these things are neurologically harmful. You know they're neurotoxins, right? I mean, mercury, neurotoxins, aluminum oxides, neurotoxins. So why are we all standing around with our thumbs in our ears for all these years, you know, since 1988 and before, you know, with the whole vaccine injury court, which we've covered that a little bit on the show, but... So these things are happening and people are getting injured or dying, and the vaccine injury court gives people crumbs to deal with their situation. I think the average reward, if I remember properly, is $150,000, and that is nothing. That might be a year of care for somebody that has an autistic child. So, but what about the loss of future grandchildren? You can't even measure this stuff. You can't measure the harm that a vaccine is done to a family's life when you have a son who should have grandchildren by the time he's 20, producing a whole new set of families for the family. How can you pay that back? How can you say, well, you know, we're going to give you 150 million. Let's say that I won't take 150 million from my eyeball. And you're telling me I'm going to give you my children for you to shoot up because, and even require in some of these liberal states in America, they require vaccines to go to school. California, Oregon, Washington, it's a requirement. Where's the science? Where's the people that should be standing up for this long decades ago? Not just now that our own flesh is under threat. You know, I find it pretty, you know, morally outrageous that nurses and doctors are now, you know, my job's on the line and my conscience can't bear with it anymore. And I'm afraid that I'm going to get a shot. Why weren't you afraid when you were jabbing 70 shots into a child before the age of two? Where was your moral outrage then? Where was your conscience then? Well, I mean, you know, so this is really something that's, you know, and after our children got their first set of shots and I saw what happened with them, I said no more.
To the Prime Minister, since it's clear you don't answer to the people, it's time we address you directly. Dear Jacinda, when I sit and think of all the shit you got us into, seems there's been no flu this past two winters, plus there's been a clear drawn winner. Want us double jabbed and booster shots just to go and buy dinner? Dear Jacinda, do you think that segregation is fair to save our elders who were locked in homes all last year? How dare you desecrate the sanctity of a funeral? Try to insinuate that 10 people is business as usual. If we can't celebrate life, are we really alive? While you mandate and dictate we should stay inside. Stay home and be kind is a phrase hardly aligned with encouraging vax to turn on unvaxxed all of the time. You say don't talk to neighbors, we're your one source of truth. Dangle the carrot of travel just to coerce the youth. You guilt trip, bribe, blackmail and threat, while silencing reactions and censoring regrets. You say trust the science, allow one-sided discussion. Anyone who doesn't stay quiet has been cut from production. You paid off our media, one by one, until only the song you allow is sung. Quite the conundrum, a legacy that you cannot run from. While the lie is unraveling and fabrication's undone. Dear Jacinda, you can threaten me all you like. You won't break my will, I won't join your right. I won't do as you say, won't forsake my rights. Won't betray my heritage, my ancestors fight. The freedom that they bleed for, I won't let that die. Make me take that jab, you'd have to take my life. You're mistaken if you think that you can push us round. The cause is not lost while we're above ground. Dear Jacinda, look at the corner you backed us into. Got me dodging needles like I was a fucking ninja. Invalidate my feelings with this talk of virtue. Watch the fall from that high horse, it just might hurt you. How dare you say people have informed consent? Keep pushing and be the cause of the people's dissent. I would have minded my own if you just left me alone. It's on the street signs, letters and texts on my phone. I know this is ridiculous, I bet you get a kick from this, while you make sure the COVID propaganda is ubiquitous. Dear Jacinda, how the fuck you sleep at night when you know that these laws you've passed are just not right? You give us no choice but to stand and fight these proposals that take away our right to life. Ironic, right? Cause you passed the reform to abortion bill that let full-term babies be murdered still. Yeah, I support the right to choose, but that's horrid and abhorrent, while you empower cops to burst in homes without a warrant. And you don't even stop to take a motherfucking breath. Got Agenda 2030 now in full effect. So dear Jacinda, I'll say this while I can before you deem it a hate speech crime with your hate speech law. I hope you reap what you sow, hope you get what you deserve. A place in history as twisted and disturbed, as immoral and merciless as the socialist before you. And I pray if God exists that when you die that he ignores you, so you can go where you belong. I see it in your eyes, the devil's in you strong, parcel tongue and in disguise. We the people fear no evil, look the devil in the eye, screaming freedom over fear. We've had enough of all the lies. Yes, I know my rights, and I will stand up for mine. Force the hand with all you plan, built this backbone behind the hearts of women and of men, those different and alike. The fury of a nation, a match ready to strike. Stand for something or fall for anything, right? Well, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. One has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. It is said that a person who pays no attention to their freedom and liberty will soon have neither. Well, in the words of George Orwell, the moral to be drawn from this dangerous nightmare situation is a simple one. Don't let it happen.
Thank you for calling the Customer Service Center for the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, also known as Comirnaty COVID-19 vaccine, mRNA. The emergency use of the product has not been approved or licensed by FDA, but has been authorized by FDA under an emergency use authorization, EUA, to prevent coronavirus disease 2019. You should not get the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine if you are pregnant, plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding.
Dear friends, for 2 years now, We have been witnessing a global coup d'etat in which a financial and ideological elite has succeeded in seizing control of part of the national government, public and private institutions, the media, the judiciary, politicians and religious leaders. All of these, without distinction, have become enslaved to these new masters who ensure power, money and social affirmation to their accomplices. Fundamental rights, which up until yesterday were presented as inviolable, have been trampled underfoot in the name of an emergency. Today, a health emergency, tomorrow, an ecological emergency, and after that, an internet emergency. This global coup d'etat deprives citizens of any possibility of defense, since the legislative, executive, and judicial powers are complicit in the violation of law, justice, and the purpose for which they exist. It is a global coup d'etat, because this criminal attack against citizens extends to the whole world, with every very rare exception. It is a world war where the enemies are all of us, even those who unwittingly have not yet understood the significance of what is happening. It is a war fought not with weapons, but with illegitimate rules, wicked economic policies, and intolerable limitation of natural rights. Supranational organizations, financed in large measure by the conspirator of this coup d'etat, are interfering in the government of individual nations and in the lives, relationships, and health of billions of people. They are doing it for money, certainly, but even more. So in order to centralize power so as to establish a planetary dictatorship, it is the Great Reset of the World Economic Forum, the Agenda 2030 of the United Nations. It is the plan of the New World Order, in which a universal republic enslaves everyone and a religious of humanity cancels faith in Christ. In the face of this global coup d'etat, it is necessary to form an international anti-globalist alliance which gathers all those who want to oppose the dictatorship, who have no intention of becoming slaves to a faceless power, who are not willing to cancel their own identity, their own individuality, their own religious faith. If the attack is global, the defense must also be global. I call upon rulers, politicians and religious leaders, intellectuals and all people of goodwill, inviting them to unite in an alliance that launches an anti-globalist manifesto, refuting point by point the errors and deviation of this dystopia of the New World Order and proposing concrete alternatives for a political program inspired by the common good, the moral principles of Christianity, traditional values, the protection of life and the natural family, the protection of business and work, the promotion of education and research, and respect for creation. This anti-globalist alliance will have to bring together the nation that intend to escape the infernal yoke of tyranny and affirm their own sovereignty, forming agreements of mutual collaboration with nations and people who share the principle and the common yearning for freedom, justice, and goodness. It will have to denounce the crimes of the elite, identify those responsible, denounce them to international tribunals, and limit their excessive power and harmful influence. It will have to prevent the action of the lobbies, above all by fighting against the corruption of state officials and those who work in the information industry, and by freezing the capital used to destabilize the social order. In nations where the government is subservient to the elite, they will be able to establish popular resistance movement and communities of national liberation, including representatives of all sectors of society who propose a radical reform of politics inspired by the common good and firmly opposed to the neo-Malthusian project of the globalist agenda. I invite all those who want to defend a traditional Christian society to meet together in an international forum to be held as soon as possible, in which representatives of various nations come together to present a serious, concrete, and clear proposal. My appeal is made to political leaders and to rulers who care about good of their citizens, leaving aside the old system of political parties and the logic imposed by a system enslaved to power and money. I call the Christian nation together from east to west, inviting head of state and the healthy forces of institutions, the economy, labor, university, healthcare, and information to join a common project, disrupting the old system and putting aside the hostility that are desired by the enemies of humanity in the name of divide et impera. We do not accept our adversaries' rules because they are made precisely to prevent us from reacting and organizing an effective and incisive opposition. I call upon nation and their citizens to ally themselves under the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, the only King and Savior, the Prince of Peace. Inox Signo vinces. Let us found this anti-globalist alliance. Let us give. It is a simple and clear program. And let us free humanity from a totalitarian regime that brings together in itself the horrors of the worst dictatorships of all time. If we continue to delay, if we do not understand the threat that looms over us all, if we do not react by organizing ourselves into a firm and courageous resistance, this infernal regime that is establishing itself everywhere will not be able to be stopped. And may the Almighty God assist us and protect us.